We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And we're recording this on Tuesday, which of course is the 1 year anniversary of Kobe's passing. But in accordance with Vanessa's wishes and quite frankly, I think where our minds are at as well is we're not going to delve into the topic of Kobe today. I would much prefer to celebrate his life, celebrate him on Mamba Day, celebrate him on his birthday, and the other 365 days a year. This is not a day that we're planning on commemorating. So just wanted to give passing acknowledgement to that up top. And that's why we won't be talking about that beyond this. The only other thing I want to say is I hope all of you Laker fans whose lives he touched in different ways, I hope you're doing okay today. My heart's with you. I'm going through it as well. I know all of us are. All of us had a personal connection to him. So much love and light to you guys. There's no smooth transition to this, but Lakers win in Cleveland last night, 115 to 108, in what I want to call a vintage LeBron James performance, but that implies as though he doesn't do it very often anymore, but 46 points on 19 of 26 shooting, some of the most ridiculous jumpers and a little help and inspiration from a Cleveland Cavaliers front office member helped in that fourth quarter there. I actually thought that was a really good win for us. Cleveland's a team that is better than people think, and they're better in a way where they're athletic. They get out in transition. They play hard every possession. They're one of the better defensive teams in the NBA. And I had that one circled as a, hey, we might drop this one type of game. So anyway, I wanted to celebrate LeBron James, especially in this first segment. And any observations you have about the game in general as well, D, but LeBron, man, just what a treat it is to watch him on a daily basis.
21 point fourth quarter, absolutely took that game by the scruff of its neck and said, we're not losing this game. I think there's always a bit of interesting feel to a LeBron James return to Cleveland. I think before the game, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong here, LeBron hadn't played in a game in Cleveland since 2018. And so a bit of a return of sorts after a brief delay of what's now like over 2 years. So just like you said, Pete, like vintage I would just call it like a classic, just a classic LeBron performance, yeah. Right? Where he just decided, like, look, especially after that interaction to close the third quarter, I had made note of it on Twitter because he came out in the fourth quarter, Mike, like he was shot out of a cannon, like just the burst in transition, the crazy jumping of passing lanes. There was a possession before he got the steal that led to the open court dunk where he literally jumped three passing lanes and almost got three separate steals, but like none of them materialized. But I just thought to myself, holy cow, this dude is everywhere right now, and he seems to have turned up his level by four or five fold, right? And just to see him close out another game this season, and it's not been a rarity, guys. Like LeBron has been great this season, and I feel like he, more so than any other player on the team, has had his finger on the pulse of what the team needs night to night, right? He's had a couple of letdown games, but for the most part, he's just been amazing this year. And last night was another example. Mike, was there anything specific that stood out to you, or take it wherever you want in terms of the observations?
Yeah, I want to spend some time on the fourth quarter for sure. But we shouldn't forget that he actually came out of the gates really hot too. And yeah, he closed the first quarter with back-to-back threes. I believe he hit four of his threes in that first quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so throughout the game, we were kind of talking about, all right, well, LeBron just passed his percentage from his best shooting season in Miami in 2012-13. And of course, look, it's a quarter of the way through the season, but it's just looking, it reminds me of when we started to see AD's jumper come around in the bubble, and Darius, kind of perfect time for one of those. Oh, okay. So it's going to go in like that. It's going to just not touch the rim. Okay. And that's what his shot's looking like right now. And I've never seen it, certainly in person, except maybe from those Miami seasons when he was getting all those open threes and he was really focused on his efficiency. And it's just locked and loaded and going in, which makes him, of course, completely impossible to guard in any facet. And so now to get to the fourth quarter, the scoring was one thing. And how about doing it, the 21 points you guys mentioned, on 9 of 10 from the field goal, for field goals, 3 of 4 from 3. And here's the other thing, though, about the fourth quarter. 2 blocks, 2 steals, no turnovers, 2 assists. It's as close to a perfect quarter as you're going to see, other than those, you know, once in a generation type ones like from Clay, you know, the 37 point like that, or, you know, the occasional ones that we used to see from Kobe. And it was just, it just built. And yes, I get that he got some additional motivation from a Cavs front office exec, which who is yet to be named. I'm sure there are plenty.
Jason Hillman. McMenamin found it. Jason Hillman, he was the chief of staff for the Cavs general, chief of staff of something for the Cavs. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, Pete. And thank you, Dave. Yeah. And thank you, Peter Hillman. So that was that was fun to watch. And it just goes back to the centerpiece of all of this stuff. And this is a fun time to be on Twitter last night, on Lakers Twitter, when something like this is going on. And I think the thing that I thought most about was just, all right, here's the MVP narrative. This is the opening salvo. This is the opening burst for MVP leader. A statement game, 46 points, the dunks, the blocks, the scoring, the narrative, right, element, which we all love, with thanks now, according to Jason Hillman, who just celebrated too much on a shot that LeBron missed, according to LeBron. Like that.
He probably just lightly clapped, and LeBron did that whole, like, LeBron, Jordan, Kobe are all this, like, they have this insane part of them where, like, oh, what was that now? You, like, they're just looking for that any motivation, right? And he was able to get that from that. I'd like to think that the famous Trudellian Zen peace of mind that it's all going to be okay with this team comes from the fact that not only do we have the, like, 27-7-7 type of LeBron at all times, there's also that 46-8-12 version in him, right? And that he is capable of going up even a couple of levels from what we saw last night, right? That was largely off of jump shots. The thing that struck me, guys, is I came across a LeBron highlight video from the Cleveland days, from the late 2000s, which is just crazy because that's like a dozen years ago, right? And he's still dominant, one of, if not, one of the very best players in the NBA at the time. And he came off of a ball screen and he planted his left foot in the ground and he just exploded up and just yammed on guys. And it was one of those like, oh yeah, he doesn't do that out of that exact same scenario anymore. Because he can't. He's older, right? Or if he can, he's only got so many bullets left in the chamber. Kobe talked about that dunk on Emeka Okafor in the first round of the 2012 playoffs, right? Where he mentioned one of those Lakers were down by 9 in the second quarter, and he just raised up and yammed on Okafor. And somebody asked him, and he's like, "Yeah, I only got so many of those," but he knew when to use them. And LeBron does that too. But what strikes me, Darius, is the way that he is able to produce. Like, we haven't seen any dip in his production at any point in his career, but how he goes about it is not the same way that he's always done it.
I've been calling him Cyborg LeBron on certain nights these last couple of seasons. He really is. Like, we often talk about LeBron's brain, and I've used this term before, as like a supercomputer, right? Like, he's like the ultimate learning machine. And you had those quotes coming out of the Bulls game, for example, where I can't remember who said it from the Bulls side, but that
Patrick Williams,
Patrick Williams, where he was talking about LeBron knowing the team sets, right? And LeBron's affinity for the film room, not Pete, but for the film room. And the idea of LeBron being this strategic thinker from an X's and O's standpoint, and then how he deploys that on the court. But there is also an element of evolution within his game that is also very mental for a player who reaches his heights and who has had the longevity that he's had. And there's a necessity of knowing thyself that is important when you're going to be an elite player for a long time. And this can totally go in a different direction. Like, you've seen players like Vince Carter, I think, is probably the best example of how that can go the other way, right? Where Vince Carter knew himself. He understood if he was going to continue to be an NBA level player, that was going to require a decrease in usage, a decrease in all of these other things that made him the superstar that he was. But in order to maintain rotation level ability at the NBA level, he was going to have to change and withdraw some from what made him a Hall of Fame player. And LeBron has taken that in the other direction. He has said, all right, well, in order to remain the best player in the league, or one of the two or three best players in the league, these are the changes I'm going to have to make to my game. These are the in-game adjustments I'm going to have to make in response to a certain type of action, how I come off a screen, how I navigate a pick and roll, how often I'm going to try to put a guy in jail rather than try to explode first step coming off of a ball screen. And those are tweaks that you make over time, right? They're not like, oh, one season I'm doing this and the next season I'm doing that. You slowly incorporate that stuff into your game until you can then dominate doing that the majority of the time. And that takes a truly special, special player. Like, we always talk about these generational talents, Mike, but this is what that means too. It's not just this combination of athleticism and skill and even the mental side, it's your ability to each step of the way evolve and change, right?
Yeah, for sure. And one way that I think about the evolution of him and this mixing of the mental and the physical, it's he still has enough plays that are physically overwhelming and athletically overwhelming that it feels dumb to even question or compare, you know, his athleticism to previous years, because clearly it's still more than enough. And the block that he had in the fourth quarter, where he almost smashed his head on the rim, that burst there, or, you know, when he cuts to the hoop and he gets up for that extra double pump, but I also noticed that there are times where he chooses not to do that. And a lot of times it's through traffic. And I think part of it is just his intuitiveness not to want to get wrapped up in a way that he's going to go down to the ground I'm trying to remember what the play was. Pete, you may remember this specifically, but he had just hit a three and then he's cutting to the hoop and he does, you know how he does that little, like he protects the ball, he gathers, and then he'll go to the side of the rim and just sort of twist in a layup where he
like a right-handed could, yeah.
Yeah. The right-handed with the English, like he could probably yam that if he wanted to or needed to, but that's for the most part an unstoppable play. Now Giannis did get one of them in the Milwaukee game, so there is that little percentage point that leaves it open for the defense to get. But it's a calculation that I think he's making mentally that, all right, for the most part in those type of situations with a little bit of traffic, I'm going to go around, I'm going to use my body, I'm going to use a little English, and then he'll save sort of the explosive burst plays when he knows he's not going to get hit. And that could just be my own thing, and this maybe this isn't a part of it, but I just wonder if that's part of that physical, mental battle that he goes through and over the course of the game.
Oh, I think you're 100% right about that, Mike. That's something that he's making that calculation of how can I be the best player I can be without jeopardizing my body, right? And his goal throughout the season is to be ready for the finals, ready for the playoffs and the finals. And his goal throughout his career is obviously to dominate the game for 2+ decades, you know, and you don't do that without making that calculation. And if that's a finals game and he's driving against Giannis, maybe he does try to dunk it and maybe he doesn't yam on him, but maybe he gets to the free throw line instead of getting that shot blocked. So there is that little bit of a sacrifice that he's going to make, but is it worth it to save those for the finals, save those for the playoffs? Absolutely. And we see that in him still being able to come up with these types of performances at this point of his career. The thing that strikes me, and that's, I've loved watching him on a daily basis because I learned so much about basketball through watching him on a day-to-day basis. It's like watching Mozart. Like, what if you got to watch Mozart write music every day, you know? And the process, it's just way different from hearing the finished symphony versus the writing process that goes into that. And I've my appreciation for not just his understanding of the game, but his understanding, like, what is the intelligence behind how to use your strength? Strength is an attribute that's always treated like this brute kind of mindless thing, but he knows exactly when to use his physicality. And that is, when we speak of his athleticism, we often talk about his ability to jump or run fast, which, as you said, Mike, are still very, very impressive. But that ability to understand when to bump somebody at the exact right moment or when to avoid them and seal somebody on your hip. There was a play on a fast break. It was either this past game or the game before where he caught it. And in one motion, there's a young player streaking up court, trying to get that chase down block. And that's one of the things I love watching the first and second year guys in particular, like Okoro against LeBron. Like the first time somebody plays against LeBron, you can very much see that LeBron hit this turnaround jumper right in the middle of the free throw line, Darius. And Okoro was sitting in the chair. He's in perfect position, stabbing with his hands, like totally locked in. And this is like, you know, the moment he's dreamed of his whole life to defend. And Okoro's a defender, right? Like, I'm defending LeBron James for the first time. And LeBron, you know, he played great defense. LeBron just hits this ridiculous shot. But anyway, the fast break play was LeBron caught it and he shot a right-handed layup, but it was one of those duck unders where if he went up normally, it would have gotten blocked, right? And so just the understanding, the game moves so slowly to him on top of everything else that he knows exactly the point to use his strength because he sees things so slowly. So these are two things that I've never really connected their relationship in basketball before, is how slowly you see the game and not just anticipation, but the idea of using your strength in the context of, I know I'm rambling and I might not be making sense here, but using strength in the context of understanding what's about to happen.
Yeah. And Darius, it's also, he makes a lot of those same decisions about when to shoot and when to drive. That's kind of that same calculus. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll be thinking, all right, it's the second quarter, man, the opposition is on a run. Why doesn't LeBron just take this to the hoop and he'll take that step back three or something? But that's all part of the season-long 365-day calculation, right?
Yes, but also, too, Mike, like, one of the things that you get from watching a truly great player and that's what LeBron is how they almost totally disregard the defender in front of them, except when it comes down to clock. Like, there's literally, and Pete, you've talked about this a bunch, right? About like the incremental decisions that go into any given basketball play that are not highlighted by those who are actually like announcing the game in order to give the viewer a better understanding of all of the things that are going on. Like, I no longer watch the NFL. But when I did, I thought that the best announcers were always talking to you about all those 11 defenders that were on the other side and all of the little mental things that the quarterback is trying to take into account in order to have success on that given possession, right? Like, oh, here comes the strong safety, like taking two or three steps up. But, and then simultaneously, the cornerback who was impressed is now playing off. And now you see this outside linebacker tap the defensive end who then scoots in 6 inches. And you're like, there's too much going on here. But basketball players are experiencing those same exact variables for their given sport on every possession. And Mike, to speak to your point, there are times where LeBron decides he's shooting that step back three because he's making all of these calculations in his mind about, oh, look, the backline defender, he now has a full 3 seconds again to be in the lane because he just lifted his foot up in order to get out and get legal in order to then crowd the paint again. And in the meantime, LeBron sees that there's 4 seconds on the shot clock. So he's thinking to himself, I'm sure, or maybe I'm just guessing here because this is how my simple brain thinks, but I've got 4 seconds to either get to the rim, but the defender can sit in there for 3 seconds. So what is the right play here? The right play is to be Cyborg LeBron. I'm going to look at my right hand. I'm going to take that step back and I'm going to nail this three instead of driving there. And there's an infinite number of decisions that need to be made.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On any given basketball possession in order to be successful. And Pete, to your point, the wonder that I still have of watching a player like LeBron is navigating all of those decisions, choosing the right one almost every single time, seemingly, and coming out on top as often as he does as a reflection of his skill level, of all of his physical gifts, and that mental piece tying it all together.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Lakers have an interesting little 3-game and 4-night stretch coming up that I would love to get your guys' thoughts on. Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview, all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skills tests that on average reduces hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests. Then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. So we have a Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday stretch coming up where it's Philly on Wednesday, then the Detroit Pistons on Thursday, which screams trap game, and then a Saturday matchup against the hated Celtics. I think that both the Sixers and the Celtics present interesting, they present different matchups than we've faced for much of this season. With Philly, the Embiid matchup, right? We've talked a lot about how Embiid's kind of taken a step forward this season. I am of the belief in that Marc Gasol will be particularly helpful in that game and in games against not just Embiid, but like Jokic and these bigger guys. There was an interesting stretch in last night's game against Cleveland. Trez was out there. Trez led the Lakers with a plus 18 and was fantastic for all that he's capable of. But it was between watching his Clippers tape and then watching last night and a couple of other games, at a certain point, a guy becomes too big for Trez to be able to defend. And Drummond took it right to Trez's chest in a lot of that second quarter. The Lakers made the adjustment in the second half, right, to have AD defend Drummond down the stretch of that game and got great results of it. That's part of the reason why with Trez, I'm like, it's fine. Like in playoff scenarios, Trez will be fine because we will have other people who can cover for him. That said, Marc Gasol has a reputation as being a particularly good against Joel Embiid. So let's focus on Philly first before we get to Boston. What are you looking forward to in that Philadelphia game, Darius?
Just that matchup, Embiid versus the Lakers bigs, starting with Gasol, but also against Anthony Davis. And then the defensive deployment of Ben Simmons and his potential to guard LeBron. And what that means for the Lakers, there may not be a better defensive duo that you can deploy against the Lakers' two stars than Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, right? Just their physical profiles, their size, their general athleticism, and their aptitude as defensive players, right? They're not just big and athletic and strong. They're also very good, committed defenders. And the ability to deploy those guys onto the Lakers' best players is what makes this game interesting to me, is that I do envision Marc Gasol being a super valuable defensive player against Joel Embiid. But I also think that the 76ers are almost surely going to deploy Embiid onto AD, and they might put Tobias Harris on Marc Gasol or someone else, right? And just say they'll live with that. From that perspective, it's really like keying in on the stars there, and just the war that can exist in terms of who's going to control the paint in that specific matchup, because we always talk about the Lakers want to threaten the front of the rim, but the Sixers, that's what those two stars are doing this year, and it's one of the reasons why Philly looks more of a threat to me this year than in years past.
With Philly, you're getting 48 minutes of rim protection because it's not just Embiid, it's Dwight Howard, who they got from the Lakers, of course. And Dwight, I think, will be particularly motivated, as we saw JaVale McGee was. And JaVale had some bright moments, and he also got out of his head a couple of times. And it was fun to watch. And I think Dwight, though, you know, the Lakers, ultimately, we've talked about this so many times, their strength last year was getting to the rim on offense, protecting the rim on defense, and the ability of LeBron and AD specifically to get there. And they didn't have to face a team in the postseason that had a true, I mean, other than I guess Portland with Whiteside, but they just pulled him out. It wasn't kind of the same deal. Like a true big who's dominant, that's going to be in there for most of the time, like Joel Embiid, that can protect the rim, and then Dwight. So I'm just curious to see how they play this. Do they end up settling for more jump shots? What if the threes aren't falling? Does LeBron really feel like, especially with where they are at the season, especially coming off the 46-point game, is he going to want to make those decisions to attack the rim a lot? I don't know. Is AD going to feel like this is a game where he can really get into the paint since he hasn't been shooting the ball as well lately? So I do think that the Lakers are a little bit susceptible there. And I want to kind of use this, Pete and Darius, to get your guys' opinion on something that I've been thinking about as well. And it's the whole not able to play 11 guys thing that Frank Vogel's been talking about lately. And so ultimately, it's a great thing. I think it's good for the Lakers. It's good for their prospects in the postseason, et cetera. What it might not be great for is guys finding a rhythm from a day-to-day basis because he can't play Alex Caruso enough minutes. He can't even play KCP. Like, KCP should be playing 35 minutes the way he's playing right now. He can't do that. He can't play Wesley Matthews enough to get him a true rhythm. He can't play THG every other game. He can't get Markieff Morris enough shots. So this is a, while the Lakers are this healthy, and knock on wood, we hope they stay that way all year, that to me can impact a trip like this or a series of notions like this. And I just think that ties together some against Philly, where they're going to have to hit some shots. And I know they've been hitting shots all year, except for the last two games, and you know, where the outside shot, other than LeBron, it just hasn't been going down, Pete.
Yeah. So with the couple things, with the 11 man rotation thing, one thing, this has not been tried before, so I'm not going to pound my desk and say Vogel has to do this or anything, but I would love to see them keep that 10 man rotation, but kind of like baseball, have a, when you got four outfielders, one guy's going to sit every three, four games, right? With 11 guys and 10 spots to really fill in a rotation that Vogel's comfortable with.
Dodgers did it. They've done it the last couple of years.
Yeah, give a guy, I mean, and a lot of this will be taken care of by somebody banged up for one night that would normally be in the rotation, and then your problem of one too many guys is solved. But I would love for every 11 games you get a night off, right? And it's not so much of a time off where you fall out of rhythm, but it's enough to where everybody's, in fact, I would say all 11 guys do get a chance to be able to do that. So anyway, I want to talk about Philly before. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too, Darius, about that kind of musical chairs. One guy ends up standing up while everyone else is sitting down. With Philly, they are similar to the Lakers also in the respect of not just rim protection. And this is a first cousin of that. But they're really strong. Like, Embiid's one of the strongest players in the NBA. Ben Simmons, relative to his position and skill set, is big and strong. Danny Green is big and strong, right? And so they're a big team. They got Dwight off the bench doing that as well. And in that Milwaukee game, one thing that was notable to me and why I'm glad we won that game and it was an impressive win, the 19 threes kind of loom, like, is this a sustainable thing? Is that, you know, Milwaukee got all those points in the paint against us. And they did it by going through us on a lot of positions. Philly has a lot of guys, Darius, that can go through you in a way that I think is going to challenge this team. And I'd actually be pleasantly surprised by a win on Wednesday. That would be their most impressive road win of the season to me.
Oh, it definitely would be to this stage. I'm not going to get too deep into anything because I have questions right now for you guys. Andre Drummond kicked the Lakers' ass to a certain extent, right? Like, he was just big and mobile in ways, like, you know, they call him the big penguin because he's sort of slippery inside and he's built like a penguin, but he's freaking massive, like a giant.
I didn't know penguin. They called him that.
Yeah, they call him the big penguin. Yeah. Anyways.
All right.
And so, but he was dislodging guys. He got Mark into early foul trouble. He had some difficulties against AD's length and AD's ability to play strong against him.
It produced a couple of tweets from you, though, that I always look forward to.
Packed, my friend. Packed.
Packed tweet. It's so 90s. It's such a 90s basketball word. I love it.
Oh, man. I love it.
It's the most descriptive word for a block. It just is. I mean, it's what happened, man. You got packed.
So I would say, so sorry, it's quick side branch here. Not every block shot you get packed. Like, packed is when you kind of like catch it in your hand. You got a like sore shoulder afterward because they jammed it back. Now, there are swats. There are packs. Are there different types of blocks?
Of course, the pack is like you're literally trying to shove everything into the suitcase, and you have to exert that force of like your hand has to stay on the ball for a certain amount of time, right? It's like LeBron's swat where it went into the 10th row. That's not a pack. The contact of the hand has to stay in the ball, Darius, for me to be packed.
Yes, you are over the top of the guy. And Drummond, for all of his athletic ability, AD was just getting over the top of him when he was blocking these shots, and he was packing him. There was no other way to describe it. He was getting packed on all of those blocks. By the way, LeBron's block of I can't remember, was it Darius Garland or was
I think it was six in the transit, the chase down one.
Yes, the one where they had to review it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
think it was Sexton.
I just wanted to say LeBron obliterated Kuz on that. Go back and watch the tape and yes, just watch did. How Bron just obliterated Kuzma, man. Kuz
made a very earnest effort on defense too. He was ready to do what he needed to do and then just like, yeah.
And then he took the brunt of LeBron James jumping and blocking that shot. Sexton didn't get touched, but Kuz got destroyed.
Quick note on that. I may stop me if I've told the story before, but and Kuz is a much bigger guy than me. But a few years ago, they had the celebrity like 710 ESPN radio game against, you know, whoever, whichever like quote unquote stars they could get in. So, you know, it was like Josh Duhamel, people like that. But Corey Maggette played on the other squad. And I wasn't guarding Maggette. I was guarding Sugar Shane Mosley, who, by the way, couldn't play at all. Right. Which was
surprises me. Okay.
At all. I mean, look, I wasn't trying to fight him.
But I was going to say, you're talking real big about a former professional boxer. You're like, this guy is terrible. Yeah, yeah. We got to make this reckless. Go viral. We got to set up a celebrity boxing match between Trudell and Mosley.
So Shane was just kind of, you know, freelance. He would go stand in the corner and I would literally just leave him and just go trap and double team. And especially Maggette. And and Maggette is starting to get annoyed. He's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, hey man, like if you go pass it to Sugar Shane. If you don't want to get trapped here, and he was getting annoyed in that same way that athlete, you know, pro athletes are kind of like, you don't know the game if you haven't played the game. And he was getting annoyed that we were playing somewhat of a mental basketball game here in this pickup game. And anyway, I made the mistake though. One time I kind of like, I cut the wrong way and not the wrong way, but I cut and I just ran into Maggette and it felt like an absolute damn brick wall. It made me understand, at least again, to an extent. Now, Maggette is a big, solid dude. Talking about packed, I mean, that dude's abdominal area, right, Darius, is, and then there are only so many players that are as solid as that. And then there's LeBron, who not only is just as solid, but is about 4 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier than Corey Maggette. And it just makes me think every time somebody runs into him, that just has, I don't care how strong it has to like legitimate your, it just sends like shivers through your whole body. And that's what Kuz had on the time.
Absolutely.
When he sent Sexton into the rafters.
Thankfully he doesn't have to face too many of those, you know, and LeBron's dishing out that punishment, you know, to other teams. Quick question. Hearing about your pickup ball experience, I have a question for you, Mike. Where do you stand on taking charges in pickup games?
It's not going to happen. Me at least.
Yeah, well,
With my back issue. But I'm going to take that back. I am so competitive that if the game were on the line and it came down to me having to take a charge on Corey Maggette and losing, then I'll take the charge and I'll deal with the pain and I'll go to physical therapy and acupuncture even more for a couple months. So I can't, if that's the difference between a win and a loss, the problem is, Pete, you might not get the call. And so, but yes, if you could guarantee me that I'm going to get the call, then I'll sacrifice the body, even in a celeb game.
I love you, Mike.
Hey man, it's about the W. It just is.
No charges in pickup. No charges.
In pickup though, Darius, in pickup, to an extent, I agree, but if you're playing for something or if it's again, like if there's any kind of stakes whatsoever, other than just sort of the random Venice Beach run where you just get there and you don't know anybody in the first game. Like I probably won't take a charge in that game, but if I know any of the people involved and especially if there's a crowd, especially if it's for something, then, you know, you got to do it. You got to play to win.
Are there refs?
Yeah, there were refs in this one.
Okay. So if there's refs, I can understand the idea of trying to draw a charge. If there are no refs and you try to draw a charge in a game, we're going to have problems.
Agreed. I don't care. Yeah. It's not cool. Cause then you just get into the argument. Well, no, I was moving. No, you weren't. Yeah. You can't call your own.
And you end up shooting for it anyway. Right.
Anyways, back to Philly for a quick second before we move on to the hated Celtics.
We'll do Boston in the next show. We'll wrap up after this.
I'm very interested to see, I think Gasol, I was talking about Drummond and how Drummond gave the Lakers some issues. Embiid is like Drummond times 10.
Yeah.
Right. And the ability for Embiid to draw fouls, he shot like 20 something free throws against the Celtics the other night. And he's just working for post position in a way that is prone to draw and initiate contact. And the Lakers had issues with that against a guy like Drummond, especially on the offensive glass. And so Embiid in that respect concerns me in ways that go beyond just the normal, like he's a really good player and you have to be concerned about every really good player. His specific strengths and attack points and the way that he can hurt you are going to be a very interesting challenge for a Lakers team that is big in its own right and physical in its own right, but can be prone to fouling and can be prone to getting put underneath the basket a little bit more than you would want. And if Embiid senses that, that can be problematic.
So much of the conversation that we've had about the Lakers this season has been with the underlying understanding that they are the most talented team in the league. They're the defending champs and they're the overwhelming favorites to repeat. They are, on paper and even in reality, in the record book, the best team in the NBA. The best, if I were to come up with the devil's advocate argument for why they will not win, the best basketball argument I can make is the susceptibility to teams going through them. Now, I'm saying that from, we've had little bits of evidence here and there where I've been like, huh, that's interesting. Like that team went right to the basket on, right through our chest. It wasn't just Milwaukee. There've been a couple of other times, but it's also mixed in with this. This is not obviously our fully realized version of ourselves. I don't think I can make a particularly strong why the Lakers won't repeat argument without injuries coming into play. But if I were, again, that's what I think would be the best argument for it. So a game against Philly that is such a physical team, that will be something that I'm have an especially keen eye on Wednesday to see if they are going through us. And if when we want to, if we do at any point during that game, can we stop that? And I think we can, but it's what I'll have my eye on.
Yeah. I think we're going to disagree on this point again, because ultimately the Lakers' best lineups are still LeBron and AD at kind of like the 4 or 5 defensively, and then 3 guards. And that's what they played last year whenever it mattered, and nobody really went through them in those cases. Now, maybe they didn't have the right matchup, but that I just think that athletically and intelligence-wise, LeBron and AD are good enough that's not going to happen. And I think Gasol can help there as well. The other point I'd make about Philly, though, I do think that the way that you beat them is that you, so if you just play, if you play really solid defensively, they have Danny Green, yes, they have Seth Curry, but still, you know, you have Simmons on the court, who's not a threat if you just back up off him. Embiid is plenty happy to take jump shots if you let him, and just sort of keep, like, really stay disciplined, keep him out there, let him try to fall in love with that a little bit. And then Tobias Harris, you know, same thing. He's content to just loft a bunch of threes up. So I don't think Philly is as scary offensively, as long as you're being disciplined with Embiid and you're getting back. And then the Lakers, that's a team where you can run against them, you know, going back. And part of that is because of Embiid. You can get advantages in those, sort of get a stop, get out and run, you know, don't let them get set up in their big half court type defense. Same thing with Dwight Howard when he comes in. So I think that could be a nice formula. And we saw the Lakers play like that a lot last year. I think Schroeder can help in that kind of a game. So I know a couple of different thoughts there. Guys, but yeah, let me kick it back to whoever wants to jump out of that.
So I go back to who was the really one big guy that we played in last year's playoffs that's like big and physical, not Bam, but it was Jokic. And part of I thought Dwight was important in that series. He wasn't playing, you know, 30 minutes a game. He was playing in the teens, but I do think that there are points of the game where I agree with you that our closing lineup, nobody's going to rival that between talent, fit, and continuity. We have the best closing lineup in the game, but I do think that part of the reason why we were able to succeed against the Nuggets is that the minutes where LeBron and AD aren't on the floor together are minutes where I think big physical teams can win those minutes against us, to where
you're totally right. But can't you just substitute Mark for Dwight? Like, that's what I would do. I would just stagger any game like that where you're not like, just okay, either sub Mark out earlier to line up his, it's the same thing when they play the Clippers, like line his minutes up with Zubats, not Serge Ibaka. If you're playing, you know, Jokic, or like, that's all, just stagger Mark's minutes and have him play the Dwight role.
So 100% agree. What I'm saying is that this Philly game, as much of a preview game can be for what that looks like. That's currently theoretical, is like, can Mark fill the Dwight role? Because they're similar in strength, but they're not in athleticism. And so it's, I agree with you, and I think that it's going to work out that way, right? Where if you just match up Mark against their big, it's going to work. But that's what's exciting to me about this Philly game in particular, is that with both Embiid and Dwight, you've got these really physical guys. How can we cope, you know, deal with that when you also add Ben Simmons on top of that, Danny Green on top of that? They're a big physical team that I think tests that component of what we do.
So I know that we were going to end soon, and I'm going to throw a little monkey wrench in that, because I just wanted to have a brief Q&A with you guys. I want to ask you both a question about Anthony Davis, because I think that he is the guy who we haven't talked about enough lately. We gave a lot of love to LeBron, and AD had that great game in Chicago, but he, and Mike, I heard you on the telecast recently as well, sort of providing, I think, appropriate context for some of AD's scoring issues and maybe lower point totals than what we would anticipate. But he's been shooting a lot of jumpers lately, guys. And when the jumper is not falling, it's a bit of a tricky thing. I think AD is the solution to some of these questions that we're having about, like, what can the Lakers do defensively, and are they going to be physical enough? And some of that's just going to be reliant on him to decide, you know what, like, I'm going to take it away from a guy like Joel Embiid. Right? Like, Joel Embiid's an MVP candidate. He's taking the mantle as the best big man in the game. Well, that was a mantle I just carried 3 months ago when I helped carry the Lakers to a championship. AD looked like he was, what, like the 1B in terms of conversations of the best players in the world. And this season has been trickier for him. I think he's been learning what it takes to sort of be a repeat player while also growing his game. And this is an idea I've been going through in terms of trying to write out some ideas for an article that I hope to post this week. But let me ask you guys, like, how big is a game like the Philly game, for example, Philly especially, for Anthony Davis? And what does getting back on track look like for him in your eyes, if you even agree with the idea that he's a little bit off track? Not playing poorly overall, mind you, but just a little bit off track. Like, what say you both?
I mean, with AD, he doesn't look like he's running particularly well to me. There have been a few trips up court where he's seemed to be laboring, so I do wonder if there's anything physical going on. But in the absence of any, you know, anything too substantive along that, he's been on the injury report a couple of times and has missed a couple of games. But I really think, I know this is just simple, but I just think he needs to make his jumper by and large. He was 5 of 6, I think, in the paint last night, and 0 for 10 on his jumpers or something like that. I know it was 0 for 9, and I counted at least one more jumper that he missed. So if the Philly game, like, in terms of, is he the solution to issues like really big guys being able to go through us? Sort of. I mean, in that Anthony Davis is a great answer to any question, just like LeBron James is a great answer to any basketball question. But I think the weakest defensive version of Anthony Davis that you get is against guys who can go through him. They will win some of those battles in ways that other types of players won't. And perimeter players who can shoot threes coming off of screens, which we've seen him defending more and more. But those are kind of like the borders of his very expansive defensive game. That's where you start seeing him become more human, see him become very good instead of one of the best in the world. So yeah, I think to some extent it does. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm not too worried about AD, and I think it's mostly just his jumper needs to fall. Where are you at on that, Mike?
I'm gonna shock you guys. I am zero worried about AD.
Yeah. Yeah.
On defense, I think you guys make a good point, and Pete, what you just said, that there are some players who are physically going to be able to move them some, but if AD's locked in, those are the kind of guys that he can then pack from over the top. And that's what he did with Drummond. That's what he did with Drummond when it mattered. So Drummond he had his way for a while, and then AD said, okay, enough. And he swatted his ass a couple times like that. So that's always going to be there. If the guy is, you know, bigger, like Embiid, Jokic style, I mean, same type of thing. Like, AD can go over the top with Jokic because of his athleticism. So Jokic can push him under the rim, and then they get there in front of the rim, and Jokic looks over, sees that AD's got his hand over the basketball, and is like, damn. That's the problem with AD, is that he's never out of the play. defensively. No matter how big you are, and also if you're a guard, he can move. He can move his feet with you. Now, if you're Steph Curry, you might, or a Jamal Murray, a Dame Lillard, you might hit one step back that you have to adjust way over the top, but you're not going to eat on that all game. You're just not. It's too hard against Davis. So defensively, he's good. Offensively, here's my take. I think early this season, the jumper translated from the bubble, and it was wet. Everything was going in, and then he just hit a patch where, for whatever reason, and this has been the last couple of weeks, the jumper is not falling as much. I think it part of it has to do with the free throw shooting, and that he's questioning now what's going on at the free throw line. I think that was something that he had locked down confidence on. And so I think that extended to his jump shot and to his three. Now that it's the other way, where he's thinking a little bit about his mechanics in the free throw, he's now thinking about his mechanics on the jump shot. So, and here's the beauty though, with Anthony Davis, that he can still just get into the post. And as Darius tweeted the other day, and Frank Vogel always says this, if he's not getting into the post, the Lakers can run some actions to get him in there. Right, Darius? Like that.
Yeah.
So that's an important fix there too. And here's the bottom line for me. If he's hitting his jump shot, they're winning. You're sort of screwed. If he's not, then you just find a ways to get him the ball in the paint and have him block three shots with three steals and play defense and let LeBron do more. And that's why it works, man. That's why the partnership works.
So I will say that I mirror most of what you guys have said about lack of concern. I do think that mostly it does come down to the jump shot and whether or not the jump shot's falling. I mentioned this a few pods ago, and I know Pete shook his head at this a little bit, but I'm going to repeat it now because it's something that I think is true. Anthony Davis, as great as he is, and as much as he expanded his game in the bubble as a jump shooter, I still think in his heart of hearts, he is a finisher. And when you are a finisher, you still can be boosted up by help schematically and by help from your teammates. And I think last season, in a season where it was so clearly LeBron and AD like 6, 7, 8 levels above every single one of their teammates in terms of what the pecking order was on the team, everything was built around getting those guys the ball in the best positions to succeed. And LeBron, as a key ball handler, he did that for himself and he did that for other teammates. But AD, as primarily a finisher, got a bunch of opportunities, not only to play in isolation and shoot his jump shot, but in the pick and roll, in spin outs, in dump offs, in the open court. And I think, Pete, this speaks to him like not running as well lately. When was the last time you saw AD get out in transition and get an easy basket that way? It's been a while, I feel like. But when this season started, we started to look at AD as him elevating others around him. He is so good. He's going to make his jump shot. He's going to open up space for Montrezl Harrell. He's going to open up space for Dennis Schroeder. He's going to open up space for LeBron James. The shooting carried over, as Mike said. But we've talked about this in regards to the Clippers and other jump shooting teams. At some point, the jumper cannot be the only thing that you rely on if you're going to be a super elite high-level player all the way through the playoffs. And for a player like AD, that necessitates a little bit more help schematically and a little bit more of a point of emphasis for his teammates to be looking for him. And one of the things I hope to see as the season progresses is more of that from his teammates and more of that from his coaches schematically saying, how can we get you in the best positions to succeed and not just rely on you being Anthony Davis? And that's my only point with this. And so I'm not concerned, but I just wanted to put it out there that I'm looking for the help me help you a little bit come from the other side a little bit more and not always being driven by AD's incredible talent level and skill.
For me, I'm still on that boat of like, it's AD. It was the same thing as, you know, he didn't block a shot in the first four games. And he's like, oh, well, I'm on the perimeter and all that. And and then he blocks the first shot of the next game. Like if Anthony Davis wants a 15 free throw attempt game at any point, he's going to get it. And that's what he needs, is one of those. But that's way more an Anthony Davis thing to me than a scheme thing or anything like that. But that is a conversation to be continued. Lakers got Philly coming up on Wednesday, a little 3-game in 4 nights, Philly, Detroit, and Boston. We'll talk to you again before the Boston game. But until then,
You've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.